the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, calls for a probe into the Israeli war crime at Gaza's Nasser Hospital, where some 280 civilian bodies have been recovered from mass graves. Israel's spy chief resigns over intelligence failure in preventing the Hamas October 7th operation. And Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi calls for the expansion of ties with Pakistan, saying the two sides have decided to increase their annual bilateral trade by $10 billion. Hello and welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation has deplored as a horrific massacre the recent revelation of IOF crimes at Nasser Hospital in Gaza's Khan Yunis. The OIC has condemned the execution and mass burial of hundreds of Gazans as a war crime, a crime against humanity, and organized state terrorism. It says those executed were medical teams, patients, and refugees taking shelter at Nasser Hospital. The OIC has urged the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice to assume their responsibility in this regard. Civil service workers in Gaza have recovered the bodies of 283 Palestinians in several mass graves in Nasser Hospital yard, most of them women, children, and the elderly. Some of those executed were blindfolded and handcuffed. Earlier, we talked to our correspondent in Gaza, Moti Abu Musabeh, who gave us updates regarding Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip. Here's what he had to say.
The last night was horrific for the Palestinian people across all areas of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli occupation forces persisted and continued their airstrikes against all areas of Gaza Strip. And let me begin with the latest attack that targeted a group of the Palestinian civilians here in Deir al-Balah City in the popular market in the central area of Deir al-Balah City. The Israeli warplanes targeted a group of the Palestinian civilians. Multiple and dozens of the Palestinian casualties were left behind that attack. Over the last night as well, the Israeli warplanes carried out an airstrike against a residential building in Al-Prouk neighborhood in Deir al-Balah, in the southern part of Deir al-Balah City. The entire residential building was completely destroyed over those attacks. And here, in addition to that, in the central area of Gaza Strip, basically in an Nusayrat refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes also continued and intensified their airstrikes against the northern part of an Nusayrat refugee camp. Several Israeli airstrikes hit that area. In addition to that, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against those areas, including Al-Mughraga neighborhood, Al-Zahra town, and Gaza village area. In addition to that, multiple Israeli shells actually targeted the upper floor of the Al-Awda hospital in an Nusayrat refugee camp. The entire solar panels there were completely destroyed and devastated over that attack.
Meanwhile, Israel's military intelligence chief has resigned for failing to prevent the October 7th unprecedented attack by the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas. Major General Aharon Haliva said in his resignation letter that the intelligence division did not live up to the task that they were entrusted with. In an earlier comment, he had said that the entire war on Gaza began with a security failure. The 38-year veteran of the Israeli army is the first high-ranking official taking the rap for the Hamas operation. His remarks were followed by a statement from Shin Bet chief, who has admitted to a massive military failure on October the 7th. Israeli media and commentators expect further resignations once the regime concludes its killing campaign in Gaza. The Israeli cabinet is already under fire over the Hamas operation that tarnished reputation of the Israeli military and intelligence services that used to be deemed as invincible. Meanwhile, Israeli regime forces carry out yet another raid in the occupied West Bank amid simmering tensions in the region. The regime's military targeted the northeastern city of Tubas in the raid. During the incursion, explosions could be heard across the city. The Zionist regime has stepped up its raids across the West Bank since it began its onslaught in Gaza on October the 7th. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance fighters have carried out an anti-Israeli operation in Al-Quds. According to initial reports, three Israelis were wounded in the suspected car ramming attack. Palestinians say such moves are in response to decades of Israeli atrocities. The regime has killed at least 482 Palestinians since October the 7th. Well, the exchange of fire between Hezbollah's resistance forces and the Israeli army continues along the border between Lebanon and the occupied territories. Reports have emerged of the activation of Israel's Iron Dome system in several settlements. Hezbollah says it's downed an advanced Israeli Hermes drone. Our Lebanon correspondent, Maryam Saleh, brings us the details.
We know that the sirens are sounding in at least 12 Israeli settlements all across the Galilee region. This is also in addition to the sounds of explosions in those skies of over several of the settlements like Kiryat Shmona, Kfar Blum, Hanita, and Ishiad Yashuf, Shlomi, as well as Edmit. Those sounds of explosions, as we know, are the sounds of the fact that the Iron Dome system had been activated. But Hezbollah has, of course, launched several operations. Was significant targeting of the espionage devices in the border area that is facing the town of Al-Wazani. And that is considered, of course, one of the many times when Hezbollah has targeted espionage devices, even after they had targeted everything on the border. The Israelis are attempting to plant new devices, and every time a new device is planted, Hezbollah seems to target that. Hezbollah has also targeted groups of soldiers. You mentioned that also in the Western Galilee Park. We have one instance which was in the vicinity of the Hanita post, and another group of soldiers that were deployed surrounding the Al-Dhaira post. And this is, of course, also part of the tactics of Hezbollah, making sure that they target military personnel, not only devices. But the most significant, I think, in the last 24 hours was the fact that Hezbollah has taken down a Hermes 450. That is the fifth Israeli UAV that Hezbollah has taken down.
Iran says the response to Israel's attack on the country's embassy in Syria was a legitimate act of deterrence and in compliance with international law. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said in a weekly presser that Operation True Promise was meant to prevent further Israeli acts of aggression and to restore peace and stability to the region. Nasser Kanani stressed that the Iranian attacks were successful despite more than 20 countries working together to repel them. The spokesman further slammed the U.S., the U.K., and France for blocking a Security Council statement that sought to condemn the Israeli strike. He denounced Israeli attacks across the region, including in Syria and in Iraq, saying such strikes violate the sovereignty of U.N. member states. Iran's military retaliation against Israel on April 14th has shattered the regime's much-hyped deterrence power. Professor and political analyst Jamia Milia Islamia says a retaliatory attack has highlighted the new assertive posture of Iranian leaders in drawing new red lines and the potential costs of crossing them. He says Israel hit Iran's embassy in Damascus without fear of any serious consequences, but Iran was able to showcase its offensive capabilities and the vulnerability of the Israeli regime. And now it's time for our news review. Iran's president, who is visiting Pakistan, says the two sides intend to boost the volume of their trade by $10 billion as a first step. Ebrahim Raisi made the remark during a joint presser with Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif in Islamabad. Raisi added that the two countries are determined to improve political, economic, and cultural relations. Sharif, for his part, reiterated that the two countries' concern over the ongoing Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Now, the premier said Islamabad will work with Tehran toward the creation of a Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital. Prior to the press conference, Iran and Pakistan signed 8 memoranda of understanding for cooperation in different fields. Raisi is scheduled to meet with top Pakistani officials during his 2-day visit. He's expected to visit Sri Lanka after wrapping up his Pakistan visit. I'd like to welcome my guest to this news review, Islamabad correspondent Nasser Kazmi. and Sayed Zain Abbas, political commentator in Islamabad. Thank you both. Well, Nasser, please give us an update on what has taken place during this visit so far.
The president of Iran is in Islamabad, and it has been a busy day for him, as he has been meeting with the top Pakistani leadership, including the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Mian Shahbaz Sharif, and the chairman of the Senate, the upper house of the parliament, Yusuf Raza Gilani, along with other top officials, including the head of the National Assembly, the Speaker of the National Assembly of Pakistan, Iyaz Sadiq. And later, he was engaged in several meetings with top Pakistani officials. At the moment, when I'm talking to you, is like the president is all set to meet his counterpart, the president of Pakistan, Mr. Asif Ali Zardari. So after this meeting, he is going to meet the chief of army staff, General Asim Munir. So it was today, bilateral issues were discussed in these meetings, and both countries were in mood to enhance the bilateral trade to people-to-people contact, to enhance the people-to-people contact. Especially Iranian side offered Pakistan several projects or several opportunities, including the visa issues, including the barter trade. The border markets were discussed, and both sides agreed to go ahead with these projects because, you know, Pakistan and Iran are very closely situated on the same, they have the close borders to each other, and both the nations want to strengthen these ties, especially as I have been reporting in the morning that Pakistan is looking for the energy requirements from Iran, especially in the field of gas and electricity. And yes, the Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project was very vital for both countries, especially for Pakistan, as Pakistan is facing severe energy crisis. We have spoke to the petroleum minister, Musaddiq Malik. He was very optimistic, and he told us that yes, Pakistan is going to complete this project.
All right, thank you so much, Sayed Zain, Nasser Kazmi. Sayed Zain, I'd like to hear your perspective about the importance of this visit to Pakistan by Iran's president.
Thank you very much. This event, this visit has multiple dimensions of importance. First of all, as Pakistani government is newly formed of the February 88 elections, and Pakistan is struggling with its economy, so this is important in both ways, like about the confidence building upon the international leadership, and also its importance is evident for the trade and economy. Pakistan is struggling with to recover its economic crisis, and also Pakistan is the end IMF plan, which is again a big struggling condition. And now the huge economic trade deals and venues are opened for Iran itself, and also with the help of Iran, Pakistan can approach the BRICS corridor. I think one thing is also very important, that it's the first visit of any head of the state after the formation of new government. Also, it's the first visit of Iranian president anywhere after the Iranian retaliatory attacks on Zionist regime. So the people of Pakistan are welcoming a heroic welcome, giving him a heroic welcome and calling him the idol breaker, because of this people think that this is the victory of Islam. Both the political left and the political right are welcoming Iran, and we can imagine, we can witness the situation here, that people are celebrating as the victory of Islam against the Israeli regime. Also, the political left in Pakistan is very concerned about the sanctions. You must know that US regime has just put sanctions on the four firms just before this visit, on the firms which are cooperating for Pakistan in the peaceful defensive missile program of Pakistan. So Pakistan and Iran need to defy these sanctions with barter trade and with BRICS countries. Also, the BRIC has another opportunity because both the countries which are very close to Pakistan, like Iran and KSA, Saudi Arabia, both are concerned with the BRICS, and Pakistan can easily defy the sanctions and other things. Obviously, we know that the political and the power and economic poles are shifting towards the east. I think the, Pakistan is in need, and Pakistan should, and Pakistan would obviously explore these venues, which are very, very important for the Pakistani economy, Pakistan defense, and the geopolitical situation in the region. Also, the one thing which is very important that Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif has called and supported the narrative of Iran on the Israel, and also taken the stand and promised that Pakistan would support it, and Pakistan is obviously supporting Palestinian side of the, this conflict. So this is, I think, a very promising and optimistic approach toward building the stronger ties.
All right. Well, thank you both of my guests out of Islamabad, Nasser Kazmi, Said Zain Abbas, political commentator. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic Divide.
The fact that McDonald's had to buy back all of its franchises from the Israeli regime was proof that the boycott campaign was working. Now, other major brands are worried this campaign will further damage their brand and their profits. Countries in West Asia are the frontrunners in leading the boycott campaign. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tafwi. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, McDonald's buyback. 225 Israeli restaurants. Why? Well, they were battered by boycotts. Along with that came dwindling profits based on the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Some major brands are also one of the highlights of the program. When you take a look at those brands, Starbucks, Pizza Hut are some examples that have led to store closures and, of course, a drop in brand loyalty, average median to be about 14%. Then the part of the world that these boycotts are gaining momentum and are actually more than the rest of the world is in West Asia. Countries like Jordan and Egypt, Arab governments actually can do more. For example, why not oil boycotts?
The boycott campaign against McDonald's is one prime example of how a boycott can work. In Q4 2023, the fast food brand missed its sales targets for the first time in 4 years, recording growth of 0.7%, well below 5.5% expectations in West Asia, China, and in India. Shares fell 4% on the announcement, and things took a turn for the worse for McDonald's in occupied Palestine. It announced that it would buy back all of its 225 Israeli restaurants after sales suffered from a boycott of the brand over its support for Israel. Alon Yal, which is led and owned by Chief Executive Omri Padan, had operated McDonald's restaurants in Israel for more than 30 years.
Time now to take a look at some of the social media posts. First up, McDonald's has been hit so hard by the international boycotts that they have had to buy out all 225 McDonald's franchises in Israel. Next, who says boycotts don't work? McDonald's lost $7 billion in boycotts over Israeli support. That's according to the CFO, Ian Borden. Then, keep boycotting. Starbucks has lost $12 billion from boycotts worldwide due to its support for Israel. This one says we should boycott taxes. It is our money. Saves us from wars that we pay for and BlackRock, Zionists, cabal banks fund from both sides. Then we should boycott their money system based on greed that they control. Next, you cannot get a state contract in 37 states in America unless you pledge allegiance to Israel first. And finally, your purchase of Israeli and American products or the products of companies that support Israel is funding the crimes of occupation around the world. Those were some of the posts that we thought were interesting. Let's introduce our guests for the first segment of our Q&A. Joining us is Angie Wong from the Daily Morning Show. She's host of The Final Countdown, political commentator on Fox News, Epoch TV, NTD, political contributor for The New York Post, and other U.S. publications. Angie Wong, welcome to Economic Divide.
Thank you for having me on your show.
All right, the first question I have for you, when you take a look at what's just happened, McDonald's buying back 225 restaurants from Israel. I mean, these are consumers that have boycotted in Muslim-majority countries and Arab countries, which shows the effectiveness of their boycott. Does this mean that the boycott campaign is actually working when it comes down to the genocidal war happening in the Gaza Strip?
Yeah, no, the McDonald's boycott in Israel is certainly showing to be very effective. The McDonald's there supported the Israeli troops by giving them free meals, which is what sparked the initial boycott a few weeks ago. And since then, the entire franchise in Israel for McDonald's has lost so much money that the parent company based out of Chicago has had to buy back its franchises. They cannot show a loss for any McDonald's around the world. So this was their only move, which is to buy it back to take it out of the control of the franchisees. And we're going to start seeing other companies go the same way. Already we have another boycott for Starbucks. We're hearing that Burger King, another big fast food American brand, is also considering the same thing that McDonald has done.
Very well. Let's introduce our next guest. We have Klein Preston, international attorney, joining us, chairman of the Governing Committee for Independent Foreign Observers. Klein Preston, welcome to Economic Divide.
It's my pleasure.
My question to you here are the boycotts that are happening in countries like Jordan, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey, and the UAE. Basically, these are countries that actually are distancing themselves from Israel. These are regional countries in West Asia. If they have gone that far, why don't they just cut the trade relations during this genocidal war? Some obviously are have a lot of oil. They could stop their oil deliveries to Israel.
That's a good question. I think it's an issue of escalation. During this entire crisis, Turkey, my understanding is, has not cut off gas sales to Israel. And so I think it's more complex than just putting economic sanctions and restricting the sale of necessary commodities such as oil and gas to Israel for a number of reasons that I think only Erdogan and maybe some of the other leaders in that area could answer at this point and calculate what the damage is or would be. I think that it will escalate if the IDF does not leave the Gaza Strip. It will have to, actually. But at this time, it's hard to say why Erdogan, some of the other leaders in the Middle East, would not have implemented more stringent sanctions.
Time now for the infamous section of the program. First up, we're going to take a look at where France is buying its gas from, and it turns out that it has ramped up its imports of Russian gas. Purchases actually have surged by 75% for the year 2024. The EU, it tried to reduce its energy dependence on Russia. Russian gas supplies had previously made up nearly half of all the bloc's gas imports. Well, it just goes to show you that EU countries cannot follow that and are thirsty for Russian gas. Next entry points to a US.com style crash, where it seems like the US is set for one. Stocks reportedly could be in for a decade of next to nothing returns. Stocks appear to be in the midst of what's called a speculative bubble, which could set investors up for a dead ball era of performance. Next, taking a look at the Chinese currency, the yuan, officially it has overtaken the US dollar. Alongside the BRICS de-dollarization plans, the Chinese yuan has officially overtaken the US dollar as the top traded currency, in this case in Russia. Well, the yuan has actually also overtaken the dollar to become the most used currency in China's cross-border transactions. So you can see how the yuan is obviously giving the dollar a run for its money. Next, something that the U.S. has been doing for quite some time, targeting China. The U.S. President Joe Biden, in this case, has blacklisted more Chinese firms than the former U.S. President Donald Trump. The U.S. President has targeted 319 companies and citizens from the Asian nation more than any other administration. Biden not only left in place tariffs imposed by his predecessor, but also increased the pressure, focusing on restrictions that block access to innovation, including those in the artificial intelligence sector. Those were the items that we picked for our interview section.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The boycott campaign against McDonald's has been effective, but it's not just brand names that are taking a hit due to their association with the Israeli regime. There are other less known names and even types of boycotts that don't make it to the news. For example, the International Alliance of App-Based Transport Workers, IWATW. Probably never heard of it before. Well, what has become of them is they are comprised of 100,000 members that are spread out in 20 countries. Well, it has boycotted branded gas stations, and that's where it's been effective. Since the year 2020, Chevron is the brand name that it has boycotted when it comes to gasoline. Because Chevron has been extracting fossil gas claimed by Israel in the Eastern Mediterranean, and it has generated billions of dollars for the Israeli regime. So that's one of the things that you have not heard of when it comes to an organization such as that one. Another company that's been targeted and has worked when it comes to boycotts, it's Intel. It goes by INTC. Why? Well, Israel has reaped the rewards of association with Intel because it has invested $25 billion in occupied Palestine. It made that decision in December. That's in the middle of the U.S.-Israel genocidal war. Despite all the killings and carnage, it made that decision to do it at that time, which basically means that it's aiding and abetting Israel's apartheid for now decades due to the association that goes back that long. So that's another example that we don't hear much of. Next up, the boycott of Israel academia. That's something that is not highlighted in the news that often. And the reason is pretty obvious, as stated in their slogan, which says, you're committing genocide. Some of the examples that this is happening and the results of it, invitations to conferences, as you see there, a freeze on hiring Israelis at overseas institutions, rejection of scientific articles on political grounds, and also the disruption of lectures. And finally, a country that has taken a stance when it comes to boycotts has been Turkey. And it finally made a decision to do that after all this time. And basically, the exports is where it has impacted Israel. And that involves 54 categories. A couple of the items are steel and bricks, and that obviously has impacted the Israeli regime quite a bit, because 70% of Israeli imports actually come from Turkey. And the construction sector in Israel, which was impacted due to lack of workers, is now going to take a major hit because of the way that the Turkish government has decided to boycott the Israeli regime when it comes to this sector in particular and its products. All right, let's bring back our guests and see what they think about all this and more. Rejoining us, we have Angie Wong, Daily Morning News Show and host of The Final Countdown, amongst the other positions that she has had. Angie Wong, welcome back. We're taking a look at boycotts against other brands aside from McDonald's in countries like Jordan, Oman, and Saudi Arabia. These are regional countries. Why do you think they haven't gone and boycotted things like one of their commodities, like oil, when it comes to the Israeli regime?
For consumers, it's a lot easier to protest with their wallets. And there's now being an effort to organize multiple multinational brands to be boycotted that support Israel. I was just looking at a list right now. HP, for example, Hewlett Packard, that's being also boycotted. And there are several American brands that are visible. And there are many, many websites now coming online to boycott any sort of corporate support that supports Israel. So I think that's where it begins, because it's a lot harder to get governments and government officials to start, you know, doing the big stuff, cutting off funding to Israel, for example. So, but, you know, for I guess, protesters and people who don't align with Israel, the most easy thing to do is to do a boycott with consumer goods.
Okay, what about the fact that you have politicians that need to play a part in this? Are they hearing the voices of the protesters when it comes to boycotting Israeli branded products?
Politicians are hearing this. They are seeing visibly how much the Israeli narrative has changed since October 7th, where they once had support. The support has been waning. And this, I've never seen anything so sizable of a shift before October 7th. Now I'm really starting to see, even here in the U.S., how much of the country is not for Israel. And how can anyone be? We're seeing the images of just horror coming out of Gaza. It's very difficult to support this ongoing. I do wish that Israel would support a ceasefire of some sort, because the governments, I think they're saying one thing. They're saying ceasefire, we want ceasefire, but they're also saying to Israel, go, 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 go. And I think that's where the consumers are saying, we know better. You can't tell us one thing and do something else. So now they've taken to the resort of banning and boycotting certain brands that support Israel.
All right, very well. Let's bring in our next guest, Clyne Preston, who rejoins us, international attorney and chairman of the Governing Committee for Independent Foreign Observers. Clyne Preston, welcome back to Economic Divide. We are taking a look at the McDonald's boycott initiative, which has sparked actually further boycotts of major brands like Starbucks, which has hurt, obviously, its bottom line. Do you think these boycott campaigns on these brand names especially are affected enough to impact Israel's economy?
Sadly, I believe no, because Israel has such a strong lobbying presence in the United States that they will persevere to meet the goals that they have set forth, which are genocide. There's no question that that's the mantra that both Jewish Americans and I think the majority of Jews in Israel are ascribing to and supporting. And I think that just a couple of companies that are being boycotted, that even though they may have American ownership, at least as far as the franchisor is concerned, it's not going to have an effect. They will do whatever they have to do to continue to kill people in Gaza and commit genocide, essentially. And the American money that's going to support them through the American Jewish community is going to stand fast with the IDF and the Netanyahu government, even as distasteful as that is to many people, both in Israel and the United States, including some of the people in our Congress who've spoken out against Mr. Netanyahu. But I don't think it's going to have that great of an effect because of the American money supporting the actions that are occurring in Israel now.
All right, Andrew Wong, I'd like to get your thoughts on this because we are looking at what should be the ultimate, I mean, the goal, and that is for the Israeli economy to be impacted by this. Do you think that it is through the boycott campaigns of different things and brand names, for example?
You're asking whether or not the boycott of these larger brands will affect the economy of Israel. I don't know the economic numbers for something like a Starbucks or a McDonald's, but you better believe if the parent company is pulling the franchisee's license from the Israeli licensee holders, they are definitely getting hit by the bottom line and their profits. And McDonald's cannot show that there's any losses, right? Because it's bad for the worldwide franchise. So it is effective in that sense, but also to protect the brand, because clearly McDonald's, the parent company here in the U.S., saw that the local franchisees in Israel, well, they were getting political with their brand. And that is what corporations stay away from. They don't want to be political. In fact, they probably have policies for franchisees to not engage in politics because it hurts their overall worldwide brand. So I can see McDonald's and Starbucks and Burger King, KFC, all the way down the line, pulling their brand if the franchisee becomes political. And in this instance, by giving free meals to the Israeli soldiers, that turned McDonald's into something that is not a you know, a Switzerland of brands where they stay out of wars and conflicts, but it is clearly in support of the soldiers. Whether you agree with that or not, that is probably going against their franchisee's licensing agreement.
McDonald's has blamed the boycott campaign on misinformation about its brand. It all started when McDonald's, a franchise in Israel run by Alonia Limited, said it would provide free meals to Israeli regime forces as well as hospitals. That said, there was also another motive for McDonald's to be targeted. Over the years, the stores with their highly recognizable golden arches have been repeatedly targeted as symbols of the United States, especially in West Asia. As such, the U.S. is known to not only conduct wars, but also to be a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. Examples are the Second Palestinian Intifada, the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, and the Arab Spring protests, especially in Cairo, Egypt.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. Mahdi Abbasian is on assignment. The boycott campaign against Israel is in full swing. Although McDonald's has suffered, other major brands are also taking a hit. Let's take the case of Coca-Cola, but from the angle of why it needs to be targeted. Well, Coca-Cola operates in a settlement in occupied Palestine that's called Atarat, an illegal Israeli settlement located in the occupied West Bank. For the settlement of Atarat to be built, Palestinian homes were demolished, and the original residents were banned from returning despite residing there for generations. By having an Israeli franchise in the illegal Israeli settlement of Atarat, Coca-Cola is ignoring international law and is profiting from the illegal occupation. Atarat is one of 250 illegal settlements. Therefore, selling Coca-Cola helps sustain Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine, as it allows Coca-Cola to profit from the land stolen from Palestinians. Now, in the West Asia region, sensitivities to Israeli-linked products are at an all-time high. Consumers in this part of the world are making a concerted effort not to purchase products that lead to Israel profiting from its genocidal war. Billboards, for example, in Kuwait have pictures of children covered in blood, accompanied by the shocking "Did you kill a Palestinian today?" alongside the hashtag boycotters. In Qatar, some Western companies were forced to close after their management published pro-Israel content on social media. The branches of the American Café Pura Vida Miami and the French pastry shop Maître Choux closed their doors in Doha. There are some unexpected positive outcomes resulting from the U.S.-Israeli genocidal aggression against Palestinians, like a case in Egypt. The Egyptian carbonated drinks company Spiro Spathis, which was not very popular before the aggression, has now become extremely popular as an alternative to Pepsi and Coca-Cola after calls to boycott both. The company, which was founded back in the year 1920, published a statement on its Facebook page as an example, stating that it had received more than 15,000 CVs when it announced that it was hiring extra staff in order to expand its activities given the higher demand for its products. This is just one of many examples of how local products are now the choice instead of the major brands. That does it for this quick take section. Hope you liked it. The success of the boycott campaign has been catapulted into another level ever since the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. There's no denying in that. Well, the longer the war drags on, the more effective and widespread the campaign will be. But what this campaign has done is to also turn the focus on domestic production in the respective countries, who are obviously Palestine-friendly, and of course, it has highlighted the plight of the Palestinians. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. Hope you enjoyed it. From the Kavitakli and the team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
فإليك يا رب نصبت وجهي وإليك يا رب مددت يدي ف فبعزتك استجب لي دعائي.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. فَإِنَّكَ قَضَيْتَ عَلَىٰ عِبَادَكَ بِعِبَادَتِكَ. You have decreed your worship for your servants. وَأَمَرْتَهُمْ بِدُعَائِكَ. You commanded them to supplicate you. وَضَمِنْتَ لَهُمُ الْإِجَابَ. And you assured them that they would be answered. فَإِلَيْكَ يَا رَبِّ نَصَبْتُ وَجْهِي وَإِلَيْكَ يَا رَبِّ مَدَدْتُ يَدِي. So towards you, my Lord, I have turned my face, and towards you, my Lord, I have extended my hand. As we concluded in the previous episodes, there are some important conditions to be met before the acceptance of supplications. These conditions, these prerequisites, are those that can be found in the different traditions and the different verses of the Holy Quran. We were having a look at the different stories, traditions narrated about these conditions. For example, it is narrated in Manaqib of Ibn Shahr Ashub from the worthy book of Shaykh Tusi that a woman was circumambulating around Kaaba and a man was in the same row. The man stretched his hand toward the woman with an evil intention when suddenly his hand got stuck firmly to the woman's body. As a result, both of them stopped their circumambulation. The agents of law, the law forces, brought them to Mecca's governor and he called on the jurisprudence to issue a verdict about this odd case. All of them ordered to cut the man's hand because of the great sin he had committed beside the Kaaba. Then someone suggested asking the opinion of Imam Hussein alayhi salam before cutting the sinner's hand. Imam Hussein alayhi salam came towards Kaaba and began beseeching to the Almighty until the man's hand was separated from the woman's body. Then Imam alayhi salam was asked, should the sinner be penalized? Imam alayhi salam stated, why should you punish him while Allah has forgiven him?
Verily, you have ordained for your servants your worship and bidden them to supplicate unto you and have assured them of your response. So my Lord, I look earnestly towards you, and towards you, my Lord, I have stretched forth my hands. Therefore, by your honor, respond to my prayers and let me attain my wishes. And by your bounty, frustrate not my hopes and protect me from the evils of my enemies, from among the jinns and mankind.
Thank you, Allah. Let me hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
So, dear listeners, the mercy of the Almighty Allah is like an ocean. It encircles all of us. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has narrated from his father, from his grandfather, that people of Kufa came to Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam complaining for lack of rain and famine. They asked him, call upon Allah to send us rain. Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam told Imam Hussein, ask Allah for rain. Imam Hussein alayhi salam praised Allah and his messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and then called upon Allah. And he said,
O the bestower of the blessings, O the descender of rain, send beautiful rain for us to save your servants from inability. Amen, O Lord of the worlds. When his prayer finished, it rained heavily. An Arab came from another region of Kufa and said, I saw so much water in hills and valleys that it was as if the water waved. So, we must ask the Almighty Allah, O Allah, satisfy the thirst of all the people of us. A young man once was passing an alley when he saw a bird on a tree branch. He shot an arrow towards it, but it hit the son of garden's owner and killed him. Some innocent passers-by were arrested from around the garden for the crime. The young man came to the garden and asked, "What's the matter?" He was answered, "Someone shot this boy with an arrow." The young man said, "Bring me the arrow so that I may tell you." Then he said, "I threw this arrow for hunting, but it hit this boy. I am the murderer." The boy's father said, "I know you did it accidentally, young man, but why did you confess to your fault?" The young man answered, "In hope of your mercy, so that you would forgive me because of my confession. Because of my confession, I ask you to forgive me." So the father forgave him. We ask the Almighty Allah, O the most generous of the generous, we confess to all our sins. In the beginning of this Kumail supplication, we asked you, Allahumma ghfir li adh-dhunuba allati tahtikul isam. We asked you to forgive every kind of sin. We ask you, we confess to all our sins so that you may forgive us by your indefinite mercy. O Allah, you are the one who satisfied the thirst of all the people. You satisfied the thirst of the people of Kufa with the prayer of your sincere servants. O Allah, grant us the rain of your mercy to clear us the sins from your book of deeds. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Your Jannah, ya Allah, ya Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life, ya Allah, oh Allah.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.